From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins. Sitting in today for Tony is our own Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for Family Research Council.
Welcome to Washington Watch on this Wednesday. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here at Family Research Council, filling in for Tony Perkins. Well, impeachment fever is fully upon us. Yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi announced a formal impeachment inquiry into President Trump over the accusation that he misused his official presidential office in a July phone call to Ukrainian president. Now, I will talk with Republican Congresswoman Debbie Lesko of Arizona, who sits on the House Judiciary Committee, for a discussion on what we know, and she'll help us separate fact from fiction. In my second segment, 40 Days for Life begins today and runs through November 3rd. It's a nonstop, round-the-clock, 40-day prayer vigil in 300 cities in America and 200 cities in 29 other countries. Since 2007, they've saved 16,000 babies. I'll talk with Sean Carney, the CEO of 40 Days for Life. At the bottom of the hour, the Senate again voted on Wednesday to end President Trump's emergency declaration on the U.S.-Mexico border wall, paving the way for a veto showdown. Tony Perkins, FRC's president and host of this show, Washington Watch, has just visited the southern border and will bring his fresh perspective to us. And at 42 past the hour, Matthew Swart and three other Wheaton College students are suing the city of Chicago after being shut down while doing street evangelism. They say their First Amendment rights to free speech have been violated. I'll talk to Matthew and his attorney, John Mauck, coming up. As a reminder, TonyPerkins.com is the podcast website. Follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins or me at Sarah P. Perry. And it is also time for our Values Voter Summit. We are coming up in just a few weeks. If you haven't yet registered, go to valuesvotersummit.org. Some of our big name guests this year are Ambassador Sam Brownback, Minority Whip Steve Scalise, Congressman Mark Meadows, Dana Lesh, Ali Stuckey, Eric Metaxas, James O'Keefe, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, and many more. ValuesVotersSummit.org to register and for more information. Well, Vice President Joe Biden's younger son, Hunter Biden, was earning $50,000 a month from a Ukrainian gas company at the same time that Biden was vice president. So in a July phone call, President Donald Trump walked and talked through the procedure with President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky to look into the story. After Biden and others called the president to release the July transcript of the phone call, the president did just that. But after dealing with a rising coup within her own party over the impeachment issue, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has changed her original tune. Now that 187 House Dems, more than three quarters of the 235-member caucus, supports some type of impeachment action, Pelosi yesterday pulled the trigger on an impeachment inquiry. Let's listen to what she said.
I'm announcing the House of Representatives moving forward with an official impeachment inquiry, calling upon a foreign power to intervene in his election. This is a breach of his constitutional responsibilities.
Well, Trump naturally responded, and in his reaction to the news of Nancy Pelosi's impeachment inquiry, he said this.
It's a witch hunt. I'm leading in the polls. They have no idea how they stop me. The only way they can try is through impeachment. It's nonsense. And when you see the call, when you see the readout of the call, you'll understand. That call was perfect. It couldn't have been nicer. And even the Ukrainian government put out a statement that that was a perfect call. There was no pressure put on them whatsoever. But there was pressure put on with respect to Joe Biden. What Joe Biden did for his son.
So then Trump was asked why he held up $400 million worth of foreign aid to Ukraine before his call to the Ukrainian president, in which he raised the Biden conflict of interest question. Trump explained that he wanted other European countries to carry the load. So he said this.
What I want, and I insist on it, is that Europe has to put up money for Ukraine also. Why is it only the United States putting up the money? Then people called me, they said, oh, let it go, and I let it go. But we paid the money. The money was paid. But very importantly, Germany, France, other countries should put up money.
Well, joining me now with her analysis is one of my favorites, Republican Congresswoman Debbie Lesko, representing the 8th Congressional District of Arizona, who serves on the House Judiciary Committee. Congresswoman Lesko, glad to have you back on Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, what was your reaction to Pelosi's calling for the impeachment inquiry? Because I know that you had one.
Well, you know, at first I was like kind of happy because they finally are calling it an official impeachment inquiry, which they've been doing in Judiciary Committee since January. And what's really confusing, though, is there has been no vote on the full floor of the House of the U.S. Representatives to do an impeachment inquiry. So as the top Republican on Judiciary Committee said, there is nothing new. She just claims that there's an official impeachment inquiry. But when this has happened in the past, there has always been a full vote on the floor to authorize going into an inquiry. And so all she's really doing is saying, oh, committees, go do your investigations. And then if there's enough evidence and maybe if they get enough votes, then we'll do articles of impeachment, which is the same thing they have been doing. But so she's either trying to fool her caucus members that are keep calling for impeachment, or she's trying to play it in the good for both members. So the members that can say, oh, they're for impeachment, they'll say, oh, yes, we are doing impeachment. And the ones that it will hurt them politically, they can say, well, we never voted for this. And so she's really trying to balance thread and needle there within her own caucus because the radical left has gone insane.
They absolutely have. And I'm going to tell you, and you know this, Nancy Pelosi is a slick political animal. And you rightly pointed out her use of terminology here was enough to satisfy, at least for a short period of time, both sides of her party, because there has been infighting on this for quite some time. So there were calls for release of the transcript from the phone call, which President Trump did follow through with in very short order. What's your reaction to the transcript of the phone call? Is there any there?
No, there is no there. So I, you know, there was so much hoopla about this by the Democrats saying all kinds of things about how the president did this and that, and that's why we're going to impeach him now. Aha, we finally got something after 2-3 years of doing this. And it was a nothing burger. I have to tell you, I read through this thing, and I'm sitting in Judiciary because I was listening, but I was also reading stuff, and I was like, there is nothing here. I mean, basically, in fact, you had said in your opening comments about how the Democrats are saying, oh, he withheld the Ukraine aid. You know, they're contending that it was all about the Biden. If they didn't investigate the Biden thing, then he would hold it. I mean, it's right in the text of the conversation he had with Ukrainian president. It couldn't be more clear. They talk about it a lot. They talk about much more has to be done by the other countries, especially Germany. They're not pulling their own weight. And then the Ukrainian president agreed with them. I mean, so that's a lot of it was about that. And then remember how the media claimed falsely that Biden was named in here by the president like 8 times. It was terrible. It was only once that he brought up the name. The rest was about, you know, investigating their, you know, interference in the election type stuff. And it was all legitimate things that the president should be. It was totally a nothing burger. I couldn't believe that the Democrats have gone epileptic over this, which there's nothing there. These people have gone insane.
I love your response about calling this a nothing burger, because really, after having reviewed it, you would think based on major media hoopla that there was really some kind of earth-shattering revelation that was coming out of the transcript and the announcement that they were beginning this formal impeachment inquiry. And both are wrong. First of all, she can say whatever she wants, but she needs a vote. And second of all, the transcript doesn't indicate anything close to what they claimed it was. And in fact, the real backstory here was Joe Biden's son's involvement with a Ukrainian gas company. That is kind of where the story lies.
I know. There's all kinds of things that really should be investigated. But do you think that the mainstream media is going to focus on that? I highly doubt it. So thank God President Trump, who is media savvy, has gone to Twitter, and now the media just, you know, basically says everything that he tweets. So brilliant on his part. But, you know, the thing is that I hope the American people see this for what it is. Okay, first of all, you had Adam Schiff, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee now, for 2 years going around saying he had proof that President Trump had colluded with the Russians. Well, guess what? After $25 million spent, 2,800 subpoenas, 500 warrants, you know, all kinds of stuff, there was nothing. It said, no, President Trump did not collude, coordinate with Russia. Well, then they automatically switched. After 2 years of saying that, then they automatically switched to, but he obstructed justice. So then they hauled in Robert Mueller. Well, that was a total flop. I mean, so then they had to go from to something else. So now they latched on to this and thought, oh, my gosh, this is it. Well, for goodness sakes, you read the transcript, and I encourage everyone that's listening to read the transcript of the conversation between the President Trump and the President of the Ukraine, and you will see for yourself, this is nothing. This is a bunch of hoopla over absolutely nothing.
It is really enough to give one political whiplash, right? They've tried so many tactics. They have been talking about this forever. It has been the constant swan song of the Democratic Party. And yet every single thing has turned up a big, fat goose egg. So clarify for our listeners the transcript of the July phone call with the Ukrainian president. Does or does not show Trump leveraging military aid as a quid pro quo?
Absolutely not. And in fact, it doesn't even bring up anything about the military aid, except that their conversation was about how the, you know, in general saying, you know, Germany hasn't even helped you that much. The U.S. is helping much. And the Ukrainian president says, yes, I agree. They should help us more on the sanctions and that type of thing. It's just like this general conversation. And in fact, I think the text proves what the president is saying. He's like, we talked about how other countries aren't pitching in as much as the United States. So,
which still remains true to this day.
Exactly.
Representative Debbie Lesko, who represents the 8th Congressional District of Arizona, has been my guest. We love having her on. This is Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, 40 Days for Life begins today and runs through November 3rd, a nonstop, round-the-clock vigil to save lives. I'll talk with Sean Carney, the CEO of 40 Days for Life, about the event and what you can do to get involved. We'll be right back.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
News. We can get it from many sources, but what can you trust these days? Where can you get news that doesn't make you as suspicious as you are informed? If you're looking for something better, for honest coverage of the latest news, one trusted news source I look to is the Washington Times. When preparing for the radio program and selecting guests to join me on the show, I will often read the Washington Times and have their reporters join me here on the program because I trust how they cover the news. Join me and more than 7 million readers who turn to the Washington Times every month to get real, trusted news. For a limited time only, listeners of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins will receive a special annual rate of $69.95 for the first year. Subscribe to the Washington Times and get this special offer by using my name and visiting washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins. That's washingtontimes.com/Tony Perkins.
Are you a student? Do you know a student? Well, this year, students can apply for scholarships to attend FRC Action's Values Voter Summit at no cost. At VVS, students will join thousands of like-minded conservatives who care about the issues that are shaping our nation. They'll enjoy our Student Mixer Trivia Night, topics covering everything from history to politics to the upcoming 2020 election. They'll hear from key conservatives, including Ali Stuckey, Congressman Mark Meadows, Dana Lash, and more. They'll have the opportunity to pursue influential jobs and internships with reputable organizations at our job fair meet and greet. Students will also have the chance to learn how to impact our world by attending our student breakout sessions. From October 11th to 13th, come to Washington, D.C. for Values Voter Summit. This is one weekend no student should miss. Learn more about scholarships by visiting valuesvotersummit.org/students or by calling 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to Washington Watch on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Well, 40 Days for Life begins today and runs through November 3rd. It's a nonstop, round-the-clock, 40-day prayer vigil in 300 American cities and 200 cities in 29 countries. Its aim: to save unborn babies. Since 2007, they've saved 16,000 babies and convinced 190 abortion industry workers like Abby Johnson to walk away. Go to the website 40 Days for Life to find the nearest abortion clinic where they are hosting a prayer. That's the number 40daysforlife.com. Joining me now to talk about this God-inspired vision and how you can get involved is Sean Carney, the president and CEO of 40 Days for Life. Sean, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's good to be back. Thanks for having me, Sarah.
So here at FRC, we love spotlighting great ministries, and it is always easier to spotlight ministries that have incredible successes like yours. You must be, as an individual, as a ministry leader, thrilled with the numbers, the incredible numbers, 16,000 precious babies saved as a direct result of your ministry. Do you account for just the incredible power of God and his ability to work?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this 40 Days for Life has just been an invitation for people to do something about abortion where they live. And I think that requires trust in God. It's an invitation to faith. And the 16,000 babies that you mentioned, praise God for them. Those are just the ones that we know about. We've had a lot of these former Planned Parenthood workers leave, like Abby Johnson, who have said, look, the no-show rate for an abortion appointment goes as high as 75%. When you're out there. And so the impact is huge. And it is, I think 40 Days for Life has grown, these last 12 years since we launched it nationally. Our first national campaign was 89 cities. We have 505 this fall. It's our largest campaign ever. It does start today. And I think it's because it occurs at the most important level in the history of America, which is the local level. And it's that simple invitation to do something about a moral injustice that goes on in your own backyard.
Oh, I love that, because everyone wants to get involved. And sometimes when we face a problem that's that big, something like abortion, we don't even know where to start. So what do you say to someone who might be a little nervous to stand outside an abortion clinic? Because though myself, I have done it, I have been knee knocking every time. So what would you say?
Yeah, I think that makes you normal. I think the first time you go out, you're out there for about 5 or 10 minutes, and you're like, why am I not at home watching college football? And so, you know, it is nerve-wracking the first time, because it's meaningful and because of what is at stake. And I always tell people, I was certainly nervous. I felt uncomfortable and a little awkward the first time I went out when I was, you know, 19 years old, went and prayed while I was in college for the first time in front of an abortion facility. And remember that it's not awkward or uncomfortable because you're there. It's awkward and uncomfortable because of the reality that goes on inside the walls of an abortion facility. And, and you know, nobody wants to be there. Women don't grow up wanting an abortion. Doctors don't go to medical school wanting to be the best abortionist. Something always went wrong, and they're there doing abortions. The clinic staff didn't want to work in an abortion facility. And the only people that really want to be there that could be doing a lot of other things with their time is us. And that's why we go out there and we enter. It's not a protest. We enter into a prayer vigil. And without us, you know, that there is no hope and there is no real choice. And I always tell people, firstly, especially first timers, your drive to the abortion facility is much easier than the woman's drive who's going to have an abortion. And that's why we're there. And that's really the heart of what 40 Days for Life is about.
Well, and some who are listening might be familiar with the fact that the 40 Days for Life in College Station, Texas, ultimately helped to convince Abby Johnson, the former Planned Parenthood director, to walk away from the abortion industry. And your ministry was chronicled in the movie Unplanned, and you just welcomed your 1,000,000th volunteer. Those are some pretty impressive God victories, aren't they?
God victories indeed. You know, it's not a cliche to say that this is about hearts and minds. It really is about hearts and minds. I knew Abby Johnson for 8 years when she worked at Planned Parenthood. We volunteered on opposite sides of the fence. We were leading opposing organizations. And, you know, we've had about 200 workers, abortion workers, leave. Abby was the 26th out of those 200. But for me, it's where we were based. She was my Planned Parenthood director. She was my abortion facility director. And so I knew her for 8 years, which is why when she walked into my office, I knew that her conversion was authentic and genuine. And, you know, we had the joy and the blessing of helping her. And they did a great job making Unplanned into a movie. And you know, we saw a huge increase in volunteers going out to the vigil after Unplanned came out. And we did. We just passed the 1,000,000th mark for volunteers who have participated in the 40 Days for Life. And so that's, you know, especially as you listen to this, you know, you're not alone when you participate in 40 Days for Life. Certainly the devil wants us to feel like we're alone anytime we stand up for marriage or the unborn or the family. But we're not alone, and you're certainly not alone when you're out there praying. You're joined by 504 other cities.
I love that. So the website, 40daysforlife.com, when people go, what are they going to see? An opportunity to do what?
Yes, it says find your location, and you just click on that button. And as long as you know where you live, you can operate our website. And so you click on location, find your closest 40 Days for Life vigil. You'll be plugged in to your local leader, and you can sign up for hours. Then go out there and sign our statement of peace, and you'll be all set.
Oh, Sean, I just love it. What a fabulous ministry. We're encouraging our listeners to go to the website 40daysforlife.com. The vigil starts today. Go to the website, find out where you can get involved. This is Washington Watch. Coming up next, I'll talk with FRC's president, our own Tony Perkins, who has just visited our southern border and will bring his fresh perspective to the border wall debate and a recent vote in the Senate. We'll be right back.
radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C. And learn how you can, too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Well, you heard the website, valuesvotersummit.org. If you haven't registered yet, go there today. We have an incredible lineup. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships here, sitting in for Tony Perkins, who happens to be my next guest. The Senate again voted on Wednesday to end President Trump's emergency declaration on the U.S.-Mexico border, paving the way for a veto showdown in the White House. They voted 54-41 on a resolution to end the declaration, which Trump had used to shift billions from the military toward wall construction. Now, just coming back from the southern border with a very fresh perspective on this vote, because he has been right there, is Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, the host of this show, Washington Watch, who has a lot to say about the issue. Tony, so nice to welcome you to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Sarah, and thanks for sitting in. It's been a busy week from New York to El Paso. It's been a lot of activity this week, but you're right. I'm actually still in El Paso. In fact, I'm at the headquarters of the sector here in El Paso of the Border Patrol. Just came from the border after going through and getting a briefing at their processing site here at the El Paso sector. It's been a very informative day, and I will have to say this: as the Senate takes this move, I think they have the flexibility, I think, of doing this at this point, because in many ways the president, in his policies, has solved a lot of his problem. Mm-hmm. Now there's still a problem, but through creative means in his negotiations with Mexico, they've gone from the height of 7,500 people a week in this sector alone coming across back in the spring to down to normal of about 1,000 a week that are coming here to asylum. And so here's the best way I can summarize what we've been, seeing and hearing over the last, 8 months about the crisis and everything. And there is a crisis. I don't want to dispel that disparage that claim in any way, but it's this way. What happened is that the normal amount of folks coming across the border in a week's time is about 1,000. It surged, and that was a result of some policies, the people thinking they could get through if they had children and so on and so forth.
Right.
And so it ballooned up to 7,500, and they just did not have the facilities. So you take a snapshot of that, and it was chaotic. And the perception is that's the way they always operated. It's not. They've actually modified the operation down here to accommodate. They've got plans in the works to, if a surge like that happens again, to be able to accommodate it. But here's what the president has done in his negotiations with Mexico that the agents here say is working. Now, I'm not sure how long it holds, but with them protecting the border, that has cut down on the people crossing. But also the process now by which someone seeks asylum, they're caught here in the United States, they're processed, but then they're sent over back to Mexico. And they have to await their hearing from Mexico. So they're not free running around the United States. They're there until they're processed. And so there's about right here where we are in El Paso, in this sector, about 18,000 across the border that would have been here had not the administration worked out this new process by which they are now operating, which, as I said, is working, but only as long as Mexico is cooperating with the United States. So it's been very enlightening, very interesting to see firsthand, unfiltered by the media, what is actually happening here on the border.
You know, it's very nice that you bring that up, because I will say the timing on this isn't great. Naturally, now we're talking impeachment inquiries and we're talking about continuing resolutions to fund the government. But I want to know what you've personally seen on the border, which underscores the president's concerns, his desire to continue the emergency declaration. Do you think it's warranted?
Yeah, well, I mean, as we were standing on the border, we were only there at the actual border for maybe 30 minutes or so, and two people came across while we were there that were detained. Now, the folks coming across in you know, downtown El Paso are actually coming over wanting to be caught. In fact, they're turning themselves over because they want to seek asylum. It's a very complicated way, but it speaks to how our immigration needs to be reformed. But yes, there is still a major problem at our border. If Mexico can stop the process by which they've agreed to because of the president's negotiations, this thing goes right back to where it was before. Now, the Border Patrol, they're beefing up their facilities to try to be able to accommodate an influx of people of that nature, you know, thousands at a time. But that takes them off of the border from doing their main work, which is to secure the border, making sure the drugs are not coming across, making sure people who want to do harm to the United States are not coming across. Right now, they were telling 60% of their manpower and their focus is on facilitating those coming across the border seeking asylum, not out there protecting the country from the drugs and from those seeking to do harm to America. But again, Sarah, very enlightening. I'm going to be talking, I'm sure, more about this tomorrow. I'll be back late tonight at the D.C., and I'll be discussing this even more tomorrow.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing more about it then. Tony Perkins has been my excellent guest, the host of this show, Washington Watch, and FRC's president. Coming up next, Matthew Swart and three other Wheaton College students are suing the city of Chicago. They were shut down while doing street evangelism in a particularly famous park. They say their First Amendment rights have been violated. I'll talk to Matthew and his attorney, John Mauch, coming up next on Washington Watch.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C. I want to invite you to join Luana and myself, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through June the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Planned Parenthood is not pro-woman.
For decades, the nation's leading abortion supplier has claimed to be the champion of women's rights, but nothing could be farther from the truth. Planned Parenthood has repeatedly violated the law and violated women, from aiding and abetting sex traffickers, covering up child sexual abuse, and selling the remains of aborted baby parts, to ignoring the devastating effects that abortion has on women's physical and mental health. From its racist eugenic roots to the targeting of vulnerable communities, Planned Parenthood is an organization that not only promotes a culture of death, but makes it a reality. In a new brochure from FRC, you will find evidence that will challenge your assumptions about Planned Parenthood and equip you with the information you need to be a true champion for women and the lives of unborn children. To order this brochure and to download your free digital copy, visit frc.org/Planned Parenthood.
It's almost that time of year. FRC Action's annual Values Voter Summit is just around the corner, but there is still time to register. Join thousands of like-minded conservatives who, just like you, care about the state of our nation and want to do their part in protecting and promoting religious freedom and the sanctity of life, free speech, and marriage and the family. From October 11th through the 13th, come to Washington, D.C. to attend FRC Action's Values Voter Summit and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington. And learn how you can, too. FRC Action President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and Congressman Mark Meadows. The 2020 elections are fast approaching, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. Ask about our scholarship for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm going to give it to you one more time, valuesvotersummit.org. It's coming up a few short weeks, but we have registrations and rooms still left, and our lineup is incredible. We've got Ambassador Sam Brownback, Dr. Bill Bennett, Eric Metaxas, James O'Keefe, Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North, Todd Starnes, Congressman Mark Meadows, and a ton more. You will want to check it out. I promise you this will be one you won't want to miss. Well, Matthew Swart and three other college students at Wheaton are suing the city of Chicago after being shut down while street evangelizing in Millennial Park. They say their First Amendment rights to free speech have been violated. And I'm getting ready to talk to Matthew and his attorney, John Mock. And if you have ever seen pictures of Millennial Park, you'll know it's the park in which the famous Silver Bean sculpture appears. And in fact, I myself have been to Millennial Park many times, being a Wisconsin native, though don't hold that against me, Illinois guests. But what we've got here is Matthew himself, and joining him, his attorney, John Mauck, who came to faith in Christ through the 700 Club. He's been an attorney for over 40 years, representing many churches and ministries in Chicago. He authored Jesus in the Courtroom: How Believers Can Engage the Legal System for the Good of the World, as well as Paul on Trial: The Book of Acts as a Defense of Christianity, too. I'm going to pick up after this broadcast. John and Matthew, welcome to both of you on Washington Watch.
Yes, God bless you, Sarah.
Yeah, so glad to be on today, Sarah.
So glad to be talking to both of you. And what a compelling story. First of all, as someone who hails from this neck of the woods, who spent a great deal of time in Millennial Park, and I will tell you, has done street evangelism through Moody Bible Institute in that area. So much of this hit close to home for me. So, Matthew, I want to go to your story first as the individual student who was joined by a couple other students from Wheaton who are part of a Chicago evangelism team. So can you tell me a little bit about the kind of evangelism that you were involved with this particular day?
Absolutely, Sarah. So the specific incident in question occurred on December 7th of 2018, last year. Myself, one of the other plaintiffs, Caden Hood, as well as about four other fellow students that participate in Chicago evangelism team with us, We were in Millennium Park. We were passing out what we call gospel tracts, a simple threefold pamphlet with an information about the gospel, that sinners can be reconciled to God through faith in Jesus Christ, through repentance. And we were going out, passing those out to anyone who would take it, having conversations. When we were approached, would you like me to continue?
Yes, please.
We were doing. So we were passing out these gospel tracts when we were approached by a security guard in the park who informed us that we were not allowed to pass out gospel tracts within the park or talk to people. And, you know, we abided. I thought it was a little strange. So we went out to the front sidewalk, sat there for a minute until Caden, one of my fellow plaintiffs, decided that this is wrong. They can't do this. And he started street preaching from the sidewalk in front of the park. Mm. He was doing that for a couple minutes when we were approached by another security guard who came up to us, informed us that we had to stop. I asked him, told him it was a public sidewalk. We seemed to have the right to do what we were doing. He told me he was just doing his job, but we had to stop. So we did so, sat there for about 5 minutes until another one of our plaintiffs, a man by the name of Jeremy Chong, came to the park, joined us, told us we absolutely had the right to do what we were doing. And Jeremy then began to street preach from the sidewalk in front of the park. We were again approached by a security guard. We asked to speak with a supervisor. That supervisor then approached us and informed us that there was an ordinance in place in the park that prohibited solicitation in the park. We thought, okay, there's an ordinance. We stopped. We left. But I went back to campus that night, Sarah, feeling like this just wasn't right. It's a public sidewalk in front of the park. How can they kick us out for doing this? So I reached out to a law professor in my school, a fantastic man by the name of Captain David Iglesias, and he told me that we absolutely had the constitutional right to do this. The government has been doing this for years. They tried to do the same thing to a colonial street preacher in Alexandria in Virginia in the 1700s. So he connected me with Mack and Baker. We began to correspond. And I'm sure, you know, John can tell you, we went back and forth with the city for a while, asking them to change their rules. And everything changed around for us again when, I believe the date is April 9th, that Jeremy was at the park, again, trying to preach in front of the park after we'd been corresponding with the city. And he was approached by a man by the name of Christopher Deans, who approached Jeremy, who informed him the park had actually changed their rules. No longer were they kicking us out for this solicitation measure. They'd actually divided this public park into 11, I believe it's 11, John, 11 or 12 different rooms.
It's 11 and imaginary rooms.
11, yes, with invisible walls. And
okay.
Specifically,
no roof, invisible walls, yeah. but rooms, so we can keep you out because we're not calling it a room. Yeah, go ahead.
Yep.
Sorry. Yeah, I'm right. Sorry for bursting out laughing. But John, it's been a while since I've been in law school. And I think this is the first time I've ever heard the imaginary room defense implicated in any particular case. So finish your story, Matt. I want to hear what happens now, because now you're getting conflicting messaging. Now this is later in the year, sort of an ex post situation. But now you're being told that the park is divided. And what do those divisions mean?
There's a specific provision in the rules towards the end, which says specifically, it seems like it's even directed towards us, that the handing out of literature or the making of speeches is specifically confined to Wrigley Square, which is one of the imaginary rooms in one of the back corners of the park. And that I believe, if I'm right, John, that even there or another part of the park, you had to apply for a permit if you had to do anything.
Well, they changed the rules in non-substantive ways. The April rules said you had to get a permit, and you weren't allowed to preach in these areas without a permit. So we said that's wrong. So they dropped that, and you no longer have to get a permit. You're just not allowed to speak to give speeches in any of those 10 of the 11 imaginary rooms, or hand out written materials.
That's right.
Okay, so here you are. You've been approached. You've been told about these particular divisions and that only one of these imaginary rooms, so to speak, is available for use of distribution of material and the giving of speeches. And let me tell you, as far as a bravery gut check, I applaud you. I applaud not only your fellow plaintiffs, but you specifically, Matthew, for going to lengths that I think a lot of other people would have found sufficient to sort of, you know, deter their interest, tamp down their desire to continue in this area. But if you're familiar with Chicago, Millennium Park is a major tourist destination. It draws people from all over the world. So what better environment in which to street preach and evangelize than an area that draws so many people? So at this point now, at your connection to John Mauch comes through what avenue? When did you decide, hey, it's time to start talking to somebody seriously about what can be done in Chicago?
So me and Mr. Mauch have been connected since this first began in December. Captain Iglesias at here at Wheaton College connected me with the firm, and that, like, it should be said that we tried to have the park change these rules multiple times before we got to this point. Mack and Baker sent multiple letters to the city asking them to change their rules. So we've been in correspondence with each other all this time, and it's
an important scriptural point here.
Please,
the Lord tells us to make every effort to live at peace with all men, so far as depends on you. And it also says, don't go to court; settle quickly on your way to court. So we have tried both of those, and we always do that because we want to be peacemakers. But when it comes down to the bottom line, you can't preach the gospel. I'm sorry. We've amended the rules again, and now it's prohibited in all these spaces. And like you say, Sarah, it is a huge tourist attraction. It's the fifth most popular attraction in the United States. So people from all over the world are going there, and it's the perfect place to share the love of Jesus.
So share with me, John, a little bit about what you see as the fundamental issue in this case. And you and I think, are, you know, we're, without even speaking ahead of time, we are in alignment ideologically, philosophically, but most importantly for this case, legally. So what does this come down to?
Well, the park, a public park, is the quintessential place for First Amendment activities. We need to step back a little and say, where can you do open-air evangelism or hand out literature? You can't do it in an office building. You can't do it in the restaurant. You can't do it on the street. So the sidewalks and the public park is the only place where it's freely permitted. So we want to fight with all of our strength to always have that as an open area, not just for Christians, but for people of all faiths and people of all political persuasions to get their message out and for others to hear. So that's the big picture. And the idea of the rooms is almost, I hope the judge gets as much of a charge out of it as you did, Sarah. It's ridiculous.
They're trying to make it
into something that it's not. It's a public park. It's open. The sun shines. It rains. There's grass. People walking on the grass. People chatting. People picnicking. That's not rooms.
Now, tell me where this stands procedurally. Where in the process are you at this point so we can follow along and follow this case closely? Because really, it does bear such import, not only for the city of Chicago, but for those of us who follow legal developments, and particularly as those developments that implicate our ability to preach the gospel and to speak freely under the First Amendment in a public space. Where are you procedurally?
Well, I want to say, where are we? Because in Jesus in the Courtroom, I wrote about the importance of the body working together. And I'm so thrilled to be on this show with you, Sarah, because we need prayer. We're going to be in court for the first time tomorrow. We filed the lawsuit last Thursday, and we've applied for a permanent or preliminary injunction. And the judge gave us a very prompt hearing date. So we'll be there tomorrow morning asking him to temporarily suspend these rules while we go through all the briefing and stuff. But we're hoping that the evangelists can go out tomorrow evening, Friday evening, and start sharing the gospel without this law hanging over them. So I'm asking people everywhere to pray that the word of the Lord can go forth freely. Mm.
Oh, my goodness. What a wonderful clarion call for the listeners who understand now through this story and through this case that this is about so much more than just the simplicity of fundamental constitutional freedoms. This is really about God at work through government and what we are able to accomplish for his kingdom and the ability to say letter A, the beginning of any message to the gospel, so directly impacts everyone who listens to this show, because we talk a lot of policy, we talk law, we talk politics, but at the end of the day, this is really about the ability to expand the gospel of Jesus Christ. So you can speak to this legally. If the city of Chicago prevails, do you believe it will have a chilling effect on free speech nationally, understanding that we're just dealing with one park in the city of Chicago?
Yes. If you read the cases, and they go back probably 60 to 70 years on free speech in public areas, you see that different governments try, and mostly suppressing religious speech, but also other types of speech. They stand on their heads. They try and come up with new justifications, crowd control. I mean, there are some reasonable restrictions, but they try everything, and they want to shut down the light. I think it's fundamentally a spiritual issue. That light has come into the world, and some people don't like the light because they're in darkness, and the light exposes their darkness, and just having the presence of evangelism or the handing out of tracts threatens them, angers them, whatever. So this is the front lines of the battle, and if the city of Chicago can, for example, pull off this idea of these separate rooms that they can regulate, governments everywhere will suddenly have turned their parks into rooms and say, we've got to restrict people here because we don't want the noise or we don't want the disturbance. There's plenty of ways to keep people from being disturbing, by the way. And our evangelists are gentlemen, and most of them are. There's an occasional nasty street preacher that may get out of hand, but where you're just expressing these wonderful views about the gospel, people still want to shut it down.
Gentlemen, I've got to let you go here. Thank you so much for joining us. We will pray. We will covenant to pray for the success of tomorrow's first hearing and for the ultimate success of the cause of Christ in the courtroom through you both. Matthew Stewart and John Mock have been my guests. You've been listening to Washington Watch. I have been Sarah Perry, sitting in for Tony Perkins, and we'll see you next time on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.